From Madison, Wisconsin, World Dairy Expo presents The Dairy Show, the digital meeting place of the global dairy industry, where we sit down to talk cows, cutting-edge technology, and the colored shavings.
Welcome to The Dairy Show. I am your host, Lisa Benke. This episode of The Dairy Show is brought to you by Dragon Corporation, Environmental Advisors. Dragon Corporation has been helping agricultural clients solve their environmental problems for 35 years. They have helped producers and processors with issues ranging from evaluating and developing sufficient water supply to understanding the sources of nitrates in groundwater for regulatory and litigation purposes. More recently, they have brought technical expertise to the complex and potentially consequential issues of PFAS. Their team of scientists and engineers can help you fully and confidently address your environmental challenges. Just a few years ago, World Dairy Expo's theme was essential elements. Today's topic is a perfect tie-in with that theme. We're going to learn a little bit more today about an element essential to life, nitrogen. It's in the soil under our feet, in the water we drink, and in the air we breathe. And while nitrogen is the most abundant element found in Earth's atmosphere, when it compounds with oxygen and becomes nitrate, it can become a headache, particularly if the parts per million in your drinking water exceed an acceptable level. I love hosting The Dairy Show because each of our guests shares something important with us, and I guarantee you today is no exception. In the next 30 minutes, we're all going to learn a little bit more about nitrates and what is meant by the phrase legacy nitrates. And this matters because I know that each of you listening has either read about, knows someone, or been faced yourself with a lawsuit claiming that a farming operation was responsible for contaminating a homeowner's well with high levels of nitrates. Today's guests have been called upon numerous times to unearth the facts about nitrates. They're subject matter experts. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to The Dairy Show, Dr. Fatima Vakili and Dr. Michael Sklash. Welcome, doctors, to The Dairy Show. And if we could begin, Dr. Sklash, could you please tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
My interest in water was really starting in high school, but I won't get into that. I became a geological engineer, and then I did a master's and a PhD at the University of Waterloo. And there the focus was on groundwater. And in particular, I used isotopes in determining groundwater contributions to stream flow. And I was involved in a large project in Ontario called PLUARG, Pollution, Land Use, and Agricultural Research Group, which involved many universities in Ontario trying to figure out the problem. How big was the agricultural chemical problem? I actually was looking at the groundwater part of it. One of the words I use, isotopes, people may not use every day in their discussions. I just wanted to give a very simple definition that everything is made up of atoms. Atoms have different versions called isotopes. And because the isotopes, like oxygen, has three different versions, they have different weights or masses, they behave differently in the environment. So we can use certain isotopes, like isotopes in water or isotopes in nitrate, to figure out processes in the environment. I'll let Fatima talk about how our interests merged.
Sure. Basically, I have the same background as Mike. I went to University of Waterloo, did my master's and PhD there, and my research was on the effect of different transport processes that are happening in the subsurface on the isotopic ratios of chlorinated solvents. So I used different type of isotopes to understand the effect of transport processes on their isotopic ratios.
Just to clarify to our listeners, there is a Waterloo, Iowa here in the United States. So when Dr. Mike talks about Waterloo, folks, these two met at the University of Waterloo in Canada. And I have to just note, Dr. Fatima, you do not sound Canadian. Could you share with us what your homeland is?
I'm from Iran originally, and I moved to Canada in December 2003.
And I find it interesting that it's your research background that brought you together. And now you are colleagues, you are our cohorts, and are both published on the subject of nitrates and their behavior in our environment. And you find yourselves both working for Dragon Corporation. So tell us how your research led to your current roles and this collaboration that I just made mention of.
I'm just going to clarify. I was at Waterloo 30 or 40 years before Fatima was. We shared some of the same professors. I got them when they were young. She got them when they were old. We didn't meet until afterwards. Fatima worked in an isotope lab that I used for doing things like nitrate isotopes and water isotopes. She began working with Dragon Corporation about 5-6 years ago. I began working with Dragon Corporation about 35 years ago. And before that, I was a professor at the University of Windsor in Ontario in geology, environmental engineering, where I did research usually involving isotopes, but also other aspects of groundwater. We were looking for somebody eventually to take my place when I retire, and Fatima was a perfect fit.
I think it's remarkable that your combined research, your combined experiences span over 50 years. And there is a remarkable history. And we'll get into that too. And we start talking about legacy nitrogen, which is basically what today's episode is all about. But maybe let's start by talking about the prevalence of nitrates in groundwater and well water, if you could speak to that.
So nitrate contamination is a global issue, and usually it's in a rural area. But here in the U.S., states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Iowa, California, Nebraska, like they have high nitrogen input and well-drained soil, which means that they have highest risk of nitrate contaminations of shallow groundwater. And it is known that the high concentrations of nitrate in drinking water can cause some health issues, such as blue baby syndrome in infants, which is low oxygen levels in the blood and can potentially be fatal.
So it is an issue that's drawn attention and, of course, litigation here and in the States. And that's something that we wanted to talk about today, because it does make it top of mind. People are initiating lawsuits, and it's causing some strife and finger pointing in the business, you might say. But as we discussed earlier before we started this podcast, not all nitrates are created the same. And that's essentially what today's discussion boils down to. You can tell us the source of the nitrates. You can even tell us the age of the nitrates that are found in the drinking water. And that leads us to that phrase that I shared just a moment ago. Legacy nitrates. Can we talk about what is meant by the term legacy nitrates?
I'll take that question. So nitrates can form from chemical fertilizer, from natural soil nitrogen, and from animal waste, and also from the air. So there's lots of different ways that it can form. Fatima later on will talk about how we differentiate nitrate that originated differently. But I wanted to talk a little bit about why we have the term legacy nitrates. I was looking at this textbook, Fries and Cherry, which is one of the textbooks that we both used in our master's and PhD studies. I used it when I taught, and John Cherry was a professor that we worked with, and I worked with him on the Pluard project. And it's kind of interesting to look at the perspective back in 1979 of what people thought about nitrate. And if I can just read a few things I think are interesting. The first, the most widespread effects result from the use of fertilizer. In industrialized countries, most fertilizer is manufactured chemically. This type of fertilizer is known as inorganic fertilizer. In less developed countries, animal or human waste are widely used as organic fertilizer. And that's interesting because, you know, now so much of the focus is on the use of manure as a fertilizer and whether it contaminates groundwater or not. There's some other interesting things here. It is disturbing to note increases in nitrate have been observed. This is them in 1979. The widespread use of inorganic fertilizers began after World War II. The major impact of groundwater quality resulting from this change in agricultural practice is probably not yet fully developed. So this is a groundwater textbook. They're fully aware that groundwater moves really slowly. A lot of nitrate was applied starting in the 50s and the 60s. And they suspect, but don't say, that there's going to be a legacy nitrate issue. That term is developed maybe in the last 20 or 30 years. And it relates to people understanding that the groundwater moves slowly and that it's got nitrate in it. So what you see in it now didn't come from what you put on last year. It's been there for a while. It's something that we've been finding when we look at groundwater situations where the dairy farmers or the farmers are using the best management practices to limit the nitrate to what the plants need. But the nitrate levels aren't going down in the groundwater, not going down in the rivers, not going down in the Mississippi River. That's because of legacy nitrate. It's there. It's been there for decades.
So many of our listeners I know are familiar with nutrient plans. People have them written for the properties that they manage for that very reason. We want to be responsible about application and only apply that our crops need. And again, it's all about good practices. And despite good practices, what I'm hearing you say, Dr. Mike, is that we still have nitrates in the soil. They might not be the villain in this story, might not be the farm down the road. It may have been something that happened years ago. And Dr. Fatima, if I could ask you, again, science, you're applying very sophisticated science that can tell us precisely the source of that legacy nitrate found in the water. Can you tell us what are the tests that you conduct and what is their accuracy?
The best way to identify the source of nitrate in groundwater is to use the nitrate isotopes, which are nitrogen and oxygen isotopes, because the nitrate that comes from chemical fertilizers in animal waste has totally distinct isotopic signatures. So we can use them to identify if our samples are from chemical fertilizer or from animal waste. And also to estimate the age of groundwater that contains nitrate, we can use tritium isotopes, which are water isotopes. And like tritium spiked in the atmosphere during the nuclear bomb testing in 1950s, and it's radiogenic and decays over time. And that's why we can use it to determine the age of water.
I'm going to say it again, sophisticated science. When you think about it, so you're age dating the nitrates. You're doing exactly what they would do in like an archaeological dig when they're time stamping their finds. You're doing that for the nitrates found in the groundwater, and you can tell definitively, A, what the source of those nitrates were. Was it plant or animal or chemically manufactured, and you can also tell the age of it. So what is the oldest nitrate that you've to date timestamped? And then that's not a fair question. We'll ballpark this because, again, you're using information found for, and let's back up and talk about that a little bit. The tritium, that's fallout, you said, from the hydrogen bomb testing. Those are the markers, if you will, that you're using. Again, that testing took place, Dr. Mike, back in the 50s and 60s, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, peaked in 1963. So there's a very good signal. The values aren't necessarily unique in the tritium, but towards the more recent times, the last 20 years, we can definitely tell the difference between the last 10 years and the 10 years before that and the 10 years before that.
I guess I wanted to talk too about how frustrating it is, because we just talked about how people that manage soil and animals, we're stewards of the land and we're caretakers of the animals. And honestly, if that's your chosen profession, you want to be wise about how you manage it. And so when we apply this science, typically it's because someone's come to you and said, I'm faced with a situation. I don't know. I'm being accused of
perhaps not managing my resources wisely. But when you come in, I guess, could you tell us how exactly this science has been applied in real life experience? You've got people that come to you, to the corporation, that want answers. Tell us what some of these case studies have resulted in, or how you've worked through it with the people that have asked you to consult on their behalf.
I'll take that question. So I'm going to talk about one of our projects, which is my favorite project. I was involved in this project from the beginning to the end. I coordinated all the field activities and like ordered the field supplies, made arrangements with isotopes and chemistry labs to analyze our samples, and then went to the field to oversee the field activities and also did the data analysis. So our client was a large dairy in the Midwest, and they were spreading manure on the cornfield around the dairy. So there was high nitrate concentrations in the homeowner wells, down gradient of the dairy. And of course, they thought it's from the dairy and they sued the dairy. As a side note, I should say that the depth of the plaintiff wells are about 45 feet, which we call it like medium depth. And then the water level is at about 20 feet below ground surface in this area. And this soil is sandy soil, which is well drained and has like a potential of contaminating the shallow groundwater. So to investigate the source of nitrate, we picked three locations in the cornfield, knocked down the corn and installed instruments to collect water samples from about 5 feet to around 80 feet below ground level. And then we tested the collected water samples for agricultural chemicals, nitrate isotopes, and water isotopes. So all of the results showed that the chemistry of the water in the shallow zone was, which is like from surface to about 30 feet, was different than the chemistry of the mid-depth zone, which is from 30 feet to about 60 feet below ground level. So that means that water that recharges from the surface is not mixed with the water from the mid-depth zone. So it means that nitrate in the wells, in the plaintiff wells, is not coming from the surface. Also, we tested water for nitrate isotopes. Our nitrate isotopes data also showed that the nitrate in groundwater comes from chemical fertilizers. So it had like the specific range of isotopic ratios that is indicative of chemical fertilizers. So again, it means that it is legacy nitrate. It's not from the dairy. We also used tritium to estimate the age of groundwater under the cornfield. And the tritium data also showed that the groundwater predates the dairy operation. So another evidence that the nitrate in groundwater is legacy nitrate and it's not coming from the dairy.
In good science, we understand that data doesn't stand alone. It's when you do layers of data that you arrive at a very scientific and sound decision or answer to a question that you're trying to ask. I know you collaborate with a lot of other people too. And Dr. Mike, we talked about this earlier too, that we know that the amount of rainfall an area receives, whether it's under irrigation, the soil type, like Dr. Fatima just made mention of, all of those things factor into your research, your studies, and your conclusions. Who are some of the people that you also then collaborate with to, again, provide this operation with sound decision-making information?
I would just talk really quickly about one case study that we did, and it was another dairy. And the question was, what was the allowable concentration for the site? The upgradient monitoring well showed no nitrate. We knew that the whole area was covered by legacy nitrate, the regional problem. So there was a team involved where we had agronomists, statisticians, and then our group to figure out why the upgradient well didn't show any nitrate, and the regulators were going to hold the dairy to that value, and also what the value should be. And that's where some of the other people came in. And we were able to demonstrate that because of the way the surface water drained on that dairy, it actually diluted the groundwater at the upgradient monitoring well. And we were able to come up with compromise with the state that we could use an alternate concentration limit that instead of 1 or 2 or 3 milligrams per liter nitrate, it was like 30 grams. I can't remember the exact amount, but it was more representative of the water that actually came onto the site. So lots of different input into that investigation to come up with representative values that should be used, a really good understanding of what's going on under the dairy.
Your research is, again, so very specific and accurate. We all know, all of us involved in agriculture, we all want the same thing. The Environmental Protection Agency and all of us engaged in agriculture, again, want to be mindful of and be good caretakers of this limited resource we have, our water and our soil and our air. How much work do you do with the EPA to educate their staff? They're making regulations, they're enforcing regulations. And in some instances, I'm hearing you and Fatima say, our findings are conflicting with what you're imposing. How much contact do you have and how much influence maybe does your research have on regulations?
I don't know if it's affected the regulations, but at different levels, you know, the United States Geological Survey knows about isotopes and they know about legacy nitrate. The EPA at certain levels know about it. But sometimes when you're dealing with specific regulators, they may not know. They're just following kind of checkoff boxes. Do you have enough wells? What do the samples say? Thumbs up or thumbs down? So if they don't know about it before we get involved, they do know about it after we've been involved. And, you know, it doesn't guarantee that it's going to change the story, but usually it makes the story different when you know what's happening in detail and with isotopes under the dairy.
Understanding the source of the high nitrates as well as the age, and then understanding water tables, understanding all of the factors, the many, many factors that complicate the whole situation of how they wind up in your well water. And then again, remediation isn't what you do, but you are building the fact base that helps people make good decisions going forward. So I had to touch too, because I found it interesting. Obviously, in your field of study, you're subject experts. And Dr. Sklash, if you could tell us a little bit, you were invited to New Zealand because, again, you are a noted expert in the field. Tell us about that trip to New Zealand and any lessons you may have learned there or shared there.
I always describe it as work that turned into fun. It was a great experience. In 2017, a large family-run dairy, not as large as we see in the United States, but large for New Zealand, invited me to come down to help them at a hearing that the regulators were having related to nitrate in groundwater. They had read articles and seen information. I actually spent 4 months in New Zealand in the mid-80s doing isotope work that probably was my best research work ever. So I didn't have any hesitation to go down there. And what I did was I visited the dairy and looked at how they were monitoring for nitrate. They were using best management practices. They were multi-generational owners of the property and wanted it to go on and on. So they were concerned that the new regulations would be problematic. So one of the things I noted and reported on in the hearing, it was a 15-minute hearing, was that their monitoring systems were totally unsuitable. You know, where they sampled for nitrate, they would never, ever be accepted in North America. And you're making regulatory decisions on these data just didn't make sense at all. Since then, I've helped this dairy with other issues such as proposed limits on water for irrigation use. Again, making sure that they understand the science there and are not just checking boxes on how much water people should be allowed to use. Yeah, so it was a good experience.
As we're coming to a close here in today's episode, I just wanted to share, I guess, appreciation. As you pointed out, our dairy operations here and anywhere in the world are multi-generational, as is the research that you've conducted. You cited research that was conducted back in the 70s and how you and Fatima have been building upon that knowledge base and pushing us further and further towards more relevant information and better decision-making tools. So we thank you for your life's work. It matters, and it will matter for generations to come. And thank you for introducing us to legacy nitrates. Honest to goodness, I had no idea coming into this discussion that there was such a thing. When you hear that you've got nitrates in your well, I guess none of us, it doesn't occur to us that there would be potentially different sources of, and certainly not that there would be different ages of the nitrates found within those water sources. So again, Dr. Mike, Dr. Fatima, we appreciate your joining us on the Dairy Show today. As we close, is there anything else you'd like to add for the listeners?
Just really briefly, the more data you get, the better. We try to interpret what goes on in the subsurface from very small borings over large areas. And the more information you can get, either by using high resolution or isotopes, the better you'll understand what goes on and the better you'll be able to come up with a plan that works for everybody.
Dr. Vakili, do you have anything you'd like to add?
To Mike's point, it is always good to have multiple lines of evidence to prove. For example, for our case, we use several lines of evidence. Like we used high resolution water sampling or site characterization. We use water isotopes. We use nitrate isotopes. And also we calculated groundwater velocity, which all came to the same conclusion that the nitrate was legacy nitrate and it was not coming from manure. Thank you very much for having us. It was an honor talking to you.
The privilege was ours. Thank you for joining us on The Dairy Show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This episode of The Dairy Show has been brought to you by the Dragon Corporation of Farmington Hills, Michigan. What if the nitrates in groundwater or surface water were not from your farming practices? Too often when nitrate contamination is found near a dairy farm, it is guilt by association. But what Dragon Corporation has found and defended in the regulatory arena is that oftentimes the nitrate is not from the dairy farm, rather it is a legacy nitrate issue. Their unique approach using advanced scientific methods has helped dairy farmers avoid unreasonable permit conditions, helped bolster legal cases, and even avoid litigation altogether. For more information, contact Dragon Corporation of Farmington Hills, Michigan.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Dairy Show. We hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget to hit like and subscribe wherever you are listening to us today. And of course, don't forget to tell your friends about how much you are enjoying The Dairy Show. We would love to have them join us as well. And last but not least, if you have any comments for us, send us an email at wde@wdexpo.com. We would love to hear from you.